This PBS NewsHour podcast is supported in part by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target and destroy cancer-causing proteins right inside the cell. It's how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
The FDA has canceled a critical meeting of flu vaccine experts, making this the second vaccine policy meeting to be canceled since Robert F. Kennedy Jr. took over as Secretary of Health and Human Services. The annual gathering is key. Federal health officials must decide in advance which strains to target in the next vaccine, since production takes months. It comes amid one of the worst flu seasons in 15 years, with more than 19,000 deaths, according to the CDC, nearly 100 of them children. We're joined now by Dr. Paul Offit, one of the FDA committee advisors and director of the Vaccine Education Center at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. It's good to see you, Dr. Offit. So why was this meeting in particular so critical, and why did the FDA cancel it? What justification did they give?
Well, it's critical because it takes about 6 months to make this vaccine. So every March we meet, and we meet with representatives from the World Health Organization, the Department of Defense, the CDC, and we look at a map of the world, and we look at how these viruses are moving across that map as a way to predict what strains are likely to come into this country. We then pick strains we think are most likely to cause this coming year's influenza epidemic, and then the manufacturers, the vaccine manufacturers, then use that information to make the vaccine for a, what is a six-month production cycle, March to September. So it's a critical meeting, and it just got canceled.
And what justification, if any, was given?
There was no justification. We don't know who did it. We don't know why it was done. We were told later that the FDA will essentially take this in-house. They're going to make the decision themselves, presumably based on the same information, but we don't know that. What's good about this meeting is it's open to the public, it's transparent, and you can hear how we discuss what should or shouldn't be in this vaccine. Now, I think more importantly, we often do sort of a postmortem for the previous year. Did we get it right the previous year? If we didn't get it exactly right, why didn't we? And how can that inform this year's selections? And I think that sort of open, transparent process is critical, I think, for the public to know what we're doing and how we do it.
This was not the first meeting of its kind to be canceled. What do you think is happening here?
I'm worried. You have the Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices, which advises the CDC, which also had a meeting canceled. And you worry that if you look at Project 2025 and the way they comment on the CDC is that they think the CDC should no longer be a recommending body about vaccines, to sort of eliminate expertise. Just let the doctors and patients figure it out on their own. They don't need an expertise. And I just fear that we are slowly sort of tearing apart the public health process that has basically served us well. I mean, we live 30 years longer than we did 100 years ago, primarily because of vaccines. And I just think vaccines have become, I think, following this pandemic, to some, a dirty word.
Amid all of this confusion, we learned that the FDA and CDC are participating in an international meeting this week about flu plans for next year with the World Health Organization, and that's after President Trump took the U.S. out of the WHO. So what does that suggest to you?
Well, you know, you would think, if nothing else, the COVID pandemic would have taught us that it's an international community in terms of the way viruses move and affect people. What happened in China, at Wuhan, China, in 2019, clearly affected this world, as more than 9 million people died of COVID. And so we can withdraw from the WHO, we can say America first, and just hope that we can close our borders to viruses that are continuing to mutate and cause harm. But it doesn't work that way. It's an international community. And I think our withdrawal from the WHO or our withdrawal from USAID was a mistake.
This week, Texas reported the first death of a child in the U.S. from measles. It's the first U.S. measles death in some 15 years. How worried are you about the potential of a major outbreak here?
Very worried. We've had clearly a decline in immunization rates. If you look at that Mennonite community, about 80% of those children were vaccinated. That's not enough. It has to be in the mid-95% range to protect against this disease, measles, which is the most contagious infectious disease, more contagious than any other infectious disease. And so it will find those people who are unvaccinated and cause an infection. I think this was a line that was crossed. This is the first measles death in a child in almost 20 years. That's a tragedy because, one, any death in a child is a tragedy. This was a preventable death. We basically eliminated measles from this country by the year 2000. It's come back largely because people have chosen not to vaccinate their children, in part because they're scared of the vaccine, scared that it has safety issues like autism, something that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been promoting loudly and to many people for the last 20 years. And I think this is the result of that.
When it comes to measles in particular, are you confident that the surveillance that's in place right now is effective and prepared to meet the moment?
The way this usually works is that state or local health departments take on those local outbreaks. And when they feel that it's gotten out of hand or they need more resources, then they turn to the federal government. So I do worry that with the federal government in some ways pulling back, I feel in some ways in public health, that these outbreaks will continue. We're now at 9 states that have outbreaks. We've gone from 58 cases in 2023 of measles to 285 cases in 2024. And I am sure that number is going to be exceeded this year. Get to a couple thousand cases and children will then die every year of this virus. And it's just unconscionable. And what you want to hear from the White House, what you want to hear from RFK Jr. right now is get vaccinated. And you don't hear that at all. Rather, what you hear is just this kind of glib statement from RFK Jr. Well, every year we have measles outbreaks. Well, we didn't used to, but by 2000, we had eliminated measles from this country. It's come back because we've eroded faith in vaccines, largely because of efforts by people like Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Sobering insights, Dr. Paul Offit. Our thanks to you as always.
Thank you.
Across the country, our state set aside standards that are required to be covered within our classrooms, and we anchor our materials on those state standards. And so we have an obligation to our state to be instructing our students on what those state standards are, but we're certainly not trying to be divisive within our classroom. You know, we're the likeliest spot where that would happen would be in the history of our country and things that have happened. Certainly not everything that's happened in our country are things that we're proud of, but we're not trying to divide our community through that process. We're about informing our students so that they can become critical consumers of information. So my colleagues across the state or across the country would say the things we're teaching in our classroom have been identified by our communities and our state as what our students need to know to be successful for the future. So that word certain, it implies a lot, but there's this long history of how we've defined what students need to know, and we are obligated to be instructing our students about what our state determines to be critical.
Angel, the threat here is that federal funding could get pulled. What kind of impact could that have on schools and universities?
That would be devastating. The reality is the majority of colleges and universities can't function or operate without federal funding. But I think it would be devastating if you take it away students are the ones who are actually going to suffer the most. And I'd like to connect a few dots here, that the reality is we actually have a demographic cliff that we're facing in this country. There's actually, starting this year, fewer students in the pipeline to higher education, just fewer high school-age students. And the majority of students are actually going to be students of color, the largest multiracial students, and then Hispanic, Latinx students. And so if we don't figure out a way how to support, cultivate, retain them, we won't have a future workforce. We actually are going to have to do this through an economic imperative. So it would be devastating for institutions, but for students and the future of our nation.
I've got about a minute or so left, Angel, but regardless of how the legal challenges here play out, has this guidance already had some kind of an impact that will be hard for schools and universities to shake?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think the other impact that we're not talking about is the psychological effect on students who are currently applying to college. High school counselors are telling me that many of their students feel like colleges don't want them, or when they hear this news, they don't even want to go through the process anymore. And so, again, this could be devastating given that we already have fewer students in the pipeline to higher ed.
Angel Perez from the National Association for College Admissions Counseling and David Law, the incoming president of the School Superintendents Association. My thanks to you both. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amna.